Welcome to the Gen Z Stoic Podcast,
where every week we strive to lead younger generations on a path to virtue through the insight of Stoic teachings and personal stories from our lives as Gen Z Stoics.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Gen Z Stoic Podcast. I'm your co-host, Ren.
And I am your co-host, Mateo. And after a very long 3-week break of no episodes, we are finally returning back to the podcast with finals and post school year vacations and just a very packed schedule. Took a few weeks off and got all our grades settled up, took some trips, got settled, and we are officially back for the summer and to resume season 3.
Yeah, a little bit of slacking on both of our ends a little bit as well. I think taking accountability is a big thing for us. Finals did suck. End of the school year kind of kicked both our butts. We had some trips and stuff, but we're back. We're going to work harder than ever this summer. The summer's going to be big. Got some big moves ahead and going to continue with the guests here shortly. We realize with the guests, a lot more goes into that than you'd think. And securing guests is a bit more challenging than we'd imagine. So we're going to continue to work hard for that, and you're going to continue to see some great guests here on the podcast. But it's just the two of us today, and it's just the two of us because we have a lot of stuff current events-wise that we can talk about. And we decided, you know what, we should talk about these current events that are going on. Some are more important in the grand scheme of things than others, but kind of with that mentioned, the first thing we want to talk about is the Kendrick and Drake beef. You might say, wait a minute, how does this relate to Stoicism? But in actuality, if you recall, I guess it'd be a couple months ago now, our episode on celebrities, we mentioned how one of the biggest issues our generation has is the people that we are looking up to. And I'd be remiss to not say that Kendrick Lamar and Drake are two big icons. They're maybe not people's idols, but they're certainly people that a lot of people look to for entertainment and these other things. And so when these big names who have a lot of influence over a lot of people and, you know, the neighborhoods they grew up in, cities they grew up in, really claim them, it's interesting to talk about. And especially with the accusations that have been thrown around through this rap beef about pedophilia, you know, domestic violence, a bunch of terrible, terrible qualities, terrible things. It's another time to be kind of introspective and say, you know, who are we really idolizing? And that's the biggest thing for the Kendrick Drake beef that I want to mention and how it relates really to Stoicism in previous episodes we've done. Despite the fact that Kendrick is winning by at least, you know, a mile, it showcases that these are two both not so great people and who have done not so great things. And yet we give them lots of money and lots of influence in their relative spheres. Drake, I guess, probably more influence than Kendrick Lamar, but certainly they have a lot of influence over sizable audiences. And so with that kind of influence, we have to be very introspective about this and say, who are we really putting on a pedestal here? Nobody's perfect, but I'd like to imagine that the people we put on a pedestal cannot be people who beat their partner or groom kids or keep pedophiles close around and pay them, but we can put better people on pedestals, people who do none of those things, decry those things, and don't respond to them by saying, where's the proof? They respond to them by saying, that's not me, I would never do something like that. And it's very important to highlight throughout kind of all the hype, I guess, and reactions and all of these things is there's some significance to this beef in terms of how we treat people and how society works. And that's what's kind of being ignored right now.
Well, first to agree with you, yes, Kendrick is in the lead and it's not close. And I will debate anyone who says anything different. But in all seriousness, some of the things that were said in these diss tracks, if you are unfamiliar with this, by the way, that's fine. Basically what happened was there was a diss track by Kendrick Lamar that was in the feature of a song, and then they just started going back and forth with diss tracks. But some of this very serious allegations and I guess accusations that have been thrown around within these diss tracks are kind of just being seen as a joke or a meme or just something to talk about, when in reality these are very serious things that if they were normal people probably would be taken to a court of law or would be taken further. Like you said, the Kendrick calling Drake out on being a pedophile and like a sex trafficker and liking kids and all that stuff, that's a really big problem, but because he just happens to be like famous and Drake has turned into a meme in the past couple of years, it's sort of seen as like, oh, like, what's he gonna say back, instead of maybe we like shouldn't be giving this guy a really huge platform. That's my personal opinion, and I'll be honest, I've listened to a lot of Drake in my time having streaming services and music, and I think the more we just sort of brush these allegations off and just continue to idolize people that are pretty terrible and have done really terrible things, that's kind of where society's going to stay. And we've sort of seen that as well, not just with Drake and Kendrick, but just with influencers as well, who have done like pretty terrible things and we still keep them famous for our own entertainment. But that's not to say that people who are in these positions of power can't be like imperfect and make mistakes. Obviously, people are going to do things wrong and have a past of some sort. But when it gets to these really serious things that are, one, just morally wrong and can be lead people to a lot of legal trouble, it's when we should probably pull the plug and say, well, maybe we shouldn't give this person as big of a platform as we thought.
Yeah, and I can kind of, as you're talking about that, I can kind of hear the response, which is we can separate the music from the artist. It's a very common trend. We saw it with like R. Kelly, people who grew up on R. Kelly. I don't think either of us listen to R. Kelly, but R. Kelly did some terrible things, trafficked people. And there's people there who are like, we can separate the music from the artist. But that's not really how it works, because A, first of all, they make money every time you listen to their song. It's a very, very, very like fractional small amount of money, but they're still generating revenue from your listening. And second, if we were to reference one of the lines from this beef, Drake mentioning like he makes enough money to live like just off his merch, right? That's directly like influenced by us. People buying OVO merch, buying Drake merch, that's directly influenced by us. And that was the solution we presented in our celebrity video. Interestingly enough, is we do have direct influence over these people because our purchasing habits, our listening habits in this case, directly influence how much money they make and how successful they are. So, you know, if we were to take a stand or something like that, you know, Drake listening decreases by 50%, Kendrick as well, and we don't buy their merch anymore. It's kind of like consumerism, and the kind of example that I think of, not to be like political or anything, just first one that came to mind is Bud Light, where, you know, Bud Light had these controversial commercials and they had these promotional campaigns, and then you got Kid Rock shooting a, you know, 24 pack of Bud Light with an AR-15, and all these more conservatives being like, we're not going to buy Bud Light anymore. Bud Light stock goes down, their sales go down, and all of a sudden they flip their complete marketing around, and now, you know, everybody's chill with Bud Light again. So just, you know, the first example that comes to mind, we have in the kind of social media era with influencers, with artists, with all that, we have the same kind of purchasing power. And that's how we influence change, right? Is we say, all right, if Drake is actually a pedophile, if Kendrick actually beat his significant other, we don't want to support them anymore. So we're not going to listen to their music. We're not going to buy their merch. And we're going to instead devote our listening to similarly good music, but people who are, you know, maybe better, and people that we could actually maybe not look up to, but at least not kind of cringe when we think about, oh, this is a good song, but the person who sang it is a pedophile or something like that. That's the easy step we have to take. And it's something I think we should. So instead of, you know, you see all these videos where it's not like us in the club and people are really vibing to it, or, you know, Euphoria, any of these songs, we need to kind of cut that out. Like, and there's nothing, again, wrong with enjoying the music. It's a good song. I listen to it. You listen to it. I'm a lot of people listen to it. It's in the millions of streams. It's a good song, but we can't kind of just use that logic and that rationale to shove everything under the carpet. That's what you're saying. I completely agree with it. That's, I think, the stance here. And again, it goes back to that solution. When we shove it under the carpet, we're just encouraging this behavior to continue. So Drake can continue to act however he wants. Kendrick can continue to act however he wants. And they're both going to have the money to fight with lawyers, whatever charges may come their way or consequences may come their way from their poor behavior. And we see that on influencer culture as well. So what we do, just like I said in that video, is we utilize our purchasing power. And we utilize our voice collectively as consumers of both the music, if we're using this example, or influencers, as the other examples were. We collectively use that voice and say, we're not going to stand for this. We can find another person who makes just as entertaining content, who makes just as good music. For Drake, maybe it's one of his 20 ghostwriters. For Kendrick, I don't know, I think Kendrick writes his own songs, but there's, you know, a lot of rappers out of Compton. So you can just turn to an alternative, and then you don't have to deal with like the, oh, I can separate their music from their actions. Because you don't want to have some level of cognitive dissonance just for liking a song, listening to a song. That's a lot of mental hurdles to go through just to listen to a song. And a lot of people probably don't think about it as deeply as this, and are like, this is way too much, just listen to the song and enjoy it. But you have to really think about where your attention's going to, and therefore where your money's going to, and therefore, you know, where your support is going to. Because you don't want to support the type of people that have these claims thrown at them. Because in all honesty, they're probably true. There's a lot of evidence on both sides to, you know, verify the truth in that. Not saying definitively, don't want to really get in any trouble there, but we don't want to have to do those mental hurdles. So just for your own sake of not having to do that, and for society's sake of not having to support people who do such terrible things with their platform, maybe it's time for, instead of being like, oh, what's the next song that drops in the beef? Maybe it's time to end the beef and find two better artists.
Well, I liked your point about, I guess you said purchasing power, because the example I think of is like Amazon, when people are like, oh, they do these very, you know, unethical practices, or like Tesla, they're like, oh, they're mining for lithium batteries in these third world countries and like, you know, pushing people out of their homes and just causing a lot of damage. It's like, well, you own a Tesla. And they're like, yeah, well, it's like, well, I mean, that's the reason they're still doing that, is because we're still keeping them in demand. But that, I agree with what you said. And for the people, you know, who may say, oh, it's not that deep, it's just a song, it's, well, yes, the song may be good, and I won't lie, I mean, Not Like Us is definitely a vibe. It all goes to what it represents, like the bigger picture of what it's representing. And so do you really want to support something that's representing, you know, like Drake, if you listen to Drake music, do you really want to listen to something that is representing, you know, pedophilia and sex trafficking? Well, probably not. I mean, and it's tough because, you know, some of those songs you're like, oh, I just listen to them because they get me going in the gym. And it's like, it's sort of a tough balance to find. I can see both sides of that argument because we've listened to both artists for quite some time. And so it would definitely be almost extreme to say, oh, we're just going to cut them both out completely. It's like, you know, it's definitely a tough argument to make. But I think the bigger picture that we're trying to paint here is that knowing who you support and why is important, because this isn't just about Drake, like you said. I mean, you mentioned R. Kelly, recently the news with Diddy as well. In my personal opinion, I think the music industry and a lot of big industries like that are just messed up overall, and there's a lot of very shady things going on behind the scenes. That's sort of beside the point. But the point is when we idolize people, we need to know exactly why we are idolizing them, not just for surface level reasons like, oh, their music sounds good, or I like their style. It really look at the person that you're idolizing. It's definitely important. Coming back a little bit stoically, I mean, Stoics weren't idolized because of what they wore, or they were idolized because of their character and what they brought to society and how they were benefiting people morally, and how they were guiding people to live their lives better. So we shouldn't just sit around and idolize these terrible, terrible people simply because they bring us entertainment or cheap dopamine or just these little bursts of pleasure here and there. We should definitely be idolizing people that actually bring purpose into society, that, or that just really aren't terrible people, which it seems like a lot of people are terrible people in the industry.
Well, big picture wise as well, but this kind of, I guess, beef has highlighted for me is just like the lyrics of the music you consume. And this is something that's mentioned by, I think, quite a bit of people who are kind of similar genre to us, have podcasts or motivational and things like that. But music, we kind of have this phenomenon where we just put on music, and if it sounds good, the beat's good, you know, we just are like, all right, this is a good song. Like you said, right? You know, if you're listening like me, you listen to like EDM in the gym, like if it's a good beat, like you're just, you know, you're vibing to it and it's something that pumps you up. And you don't think about like anything about what you're consuming. We've always stressed on this podcast, in terms of other media like news and social media, be very hypervigilant in terms of what you consume. And I think what we've missed from that is the music aspect of that. Because music, for me especially, has been very influential and in my life. And I, you know, I'm a very avid fan of music. But I never truly looked into like the lyrics I'm listening to. With rap especially, if you listen to a lot of the lyrics, I'm not, you know, discrediting the rap artists who make them or anything like that, dissing or anything like that, but it's about guns, it's about drug use, it's about, you know, hoes and all of that stuff and that kind of culture and stuff like that. But we kind of idolize that and we're like, oh yeah, like this is a good song, like this is hype, like what a vibe. And I'll use the example of King Von because I just watched an interesting 3.5-hour documentary about King Von on YouTube. Very good documentary, very in-depth, goes above and beyond. But King Von was a literal murderer. Like, this was a dude who was on O Block, killed people, suspected of killing people. He would have been indicted if he hadn't been killed himself. And his music is literally him just telling the stories of how he killed people, or how people in his life he knew killed people. And we have people who, and you see it a lot in the comments, like on the documentary itself, where like, you know, I heard his song and I thought it was really good, but I never thought it was this real, or things like that. And like, I didn't consider that like he was an actual murderer, things like that. But after watching this video, wow. And it's things like that where we don't tune into the actual lyrics. We just like enjoy the flow. We enjoy the beat. We enjoy the wordplay and his rapping style, but we don't think about, you know, this kid grew up in a tough environment where, you know, murder was very common. This is probably an actual story that he's just self-incriminating on right now. So that's the example that's, you know, most fresh in my mind, because there are a few King Von songs that I enjoy listening to. I listened to them this morning after watching that documentary, and I was like, wow, that's crazy. This is just a dude talking about how he killed somebody. And that's an extreme example, but, you know, a lot of the Chicago drill scene is similar to that, where they're telling stories of crime, Chief Keef, things like that. And rap, it's really tough. And for me, it's gotten to the point, you know, this beef has highlighted for me, where like I'll be listening to rap now and there's like some lyric that's very vain, very just promoting degenerate values. And I'm like, wow, I can't listen to this anymore. So not to say that, you know, it's bad to listen to rap, or if, you know, the songs that you like have lyrics that are maybe don't align with the values that you have, that it's a terrible reflection of you. Because, you know, not everybody who listens to this, you know, hard style rap is going to go out and emulate those qualities. But there are people who do. And that's what I think is important to highlight. And again, goes back to that support piece, is you are directly giving money into the pockets of these people when you listen to their songs and you stream them. So we should maybe take just a second to think about the type of people that we're giving our money to then, instead of just saying, is this song good or not? Okay. And it has to do with the lyrics especially. Because while I don't think it's like a direct reflection, if it's not something where I'm saying, oh, if you listen to these songs and you like still think they're good, then, you know, you're a bad person. Nothing like that. But if you are always, when you're in the car driving, when you're listening to music, surrounding yourself with messages that are like promoting drug use, promoting violence against women, promoting treating women unfairly and terribly, and promoting just being an overall bad person, maybe that's not the thing to do 100% of the time. Maybe that's not the environment you want to surround yourself with your musical choice. Again, healthy alternatives to that. And it's not as paramount as traditional media with like news and stuff, or social media, I would say, but just something to consider. And this rap beef really between Kendrick and Drake really highlights that, is consider the lyrics of what you're listening to. And if they don't align, you know, with what you're doing in your life, maybe consider something else. All I'm saying. But my last kind of piece of advice there.
No, that's good. I actually was hoping you were going to bring that up. I forgot we talked about the King Von example, but we can also bring up the X example. He was killed, but there was a documentary I watched about him a couple of years ago that came out, which was really insane, because it really goes into like how violent of a person he was and how he like hit his girlfriend and was going to be basically put in a prison for it until he was, and before he went to court, he was killed tragically. You know, I don't wish death upon anybody, but it just kind of shows you like, and he got really famous really fast. And I'm talking, it's rare that you see someone come to fame that fast. I think, what was that, like the 2017, 18, maybe even 19. I don't remember exactly when all of it was, but he rose very quickly. But, and don't get me wrong, his music certainly helped a lot of people. But what people were failing to realize was, as they sort of pushed the allegations aside and the accusations of who he really was aside and just enjoying the music, it's kind of a double-edged sword that sucks. But I very much agree with your statement just about there are alternatives, and that the majority of people who do listen to this type of music don't emulate those characteristics. At least I would hope not. No, I've listened to everyone that you've mentioned, and I don't think that I kill people and stuff. But we know that subconsciously as well, when you listen to these things, it kind of becomes engraved in your mind, and you think about these things more. Even if you just have it on in the background all the time, like you said, you're still registering it one way or another, and it's sort of becoming what you think about all the time and what you see. So there's definitely, and like you said, listening to music for for the lyrics is somewhat important, so you know what you're actually listening to. I think a lot of rap nowadays is just kind of degenerate garbage. If there's any rap I would listen to, I like listening to more Tupac when he was telling stories. Not necessarily every Tupac song, but I just felt like rap a while ago had meaning. And we really only see this in rap. We have this discussion, the majority, about rap songs, because you don't really hear a lot of country songs talking about killing people and doing drugs and stuff. And other genres, I guess R&B could be thrown in there as well. But for the most part, when we talk about rap, it's just really know what you're listening to and what it's representing, because it's important, I guess. It's not something that you should ponder on every single day, and it should be something that has your attention all the time. But just be mindful that of who you're supporting, who you're giving your money to, and ultimately what you're giving your attention to, because it will have an impact. And we can see it's definitely having an impact on the youth today, for sure.
Yeah, and I'd like to clarify there that, you know, it's not just rap and R&B. I think, you know, rap, a large element of it, a lot of rappers are kind of synonymous with gang culture and stuff like that. So you see a lot of more like hyperviolence in rap and stuff. But there are country songs, you know, that kind of toe the edge and promote, you know, bad values, like a lot of drinking and stuff like that. So I don't think there's any industry, any genre or anything like that that's completely innocent of like having terrible lyrics and things like that. It's just really promoting that like hypervigilance in everything you consume. Because, you know, music is one of those things, kind of like social media, where you don't really think about it. You just scroll or you just listen. It's kind of mindless, just a mindless choice that you don't really think about. And it's something that maybe you got to give a little bit more thought to. Because, again, I'll keep expressing, because it is important to say, like, just because you listen to rap or, you know, gangster rap or whatever you listen to, your listening habits aren't really going to indicate what your behavior is. And, you know, you're not going to hear some song that's like, oh, I was riding through, I spun on the ops, and then you're not going to like go do the same thing. Like, that's not realistically going to happen to a lot of people. But it's just, you know, it's just this idea of always keeping kind of similar energy, right? You always want to have kind of the values that you think you promote and the values you think you uphold be surrounding you. And I don't think, at least for me, a lot of the music that I tend to listen to maybe doesn't do that. And I'll be open and honest about that. It's why I'm kind of known as the Blade guy. I'm not sure if Blade is a very popular artist, but we've gotten some comments on our TikToks about my Blade tapestry. But one of the reasons that I love Blade is because it is kind of rap, but he's like rapping about nature and these kind of ethereal things. His latest album goes into a little bit of his drug problem. So there's a little bit of that discussion there. But it's a very, very kind of impassionate album. I really loved it. But that's why I like Blade, right? Is it's not something where he's talking about killing people or, you know, like mistreating women. In fact, the Blade community is kind of like the people who are really awkward around women and like avoid women. So that's kind of the cliche of the Blade community. But that's why I like it. And, you know, I get clowned a lot for it because it sounds weird and I understand that completely. But at least it's not something where it's like, you know, talking about pedophilia or talking about guns or talking about lean or talking about other drugs. It's kind of wholesome in a sense. And so that's why I really enjoy consuming that. So it's just something where, you know, don't feel bad about it if your listening habits maybe are those kind of genres and those kind of songs. But, you know, just check in once in a while and make sure that those aren't having a negative impact on you and your view on the world, because it certainly can easily happen. It doesn't happen to everybody, and it's, you know, it's not like a guarantee or anything like that, but it can happen, and it's something to be aware of, especially in something that's kind of more on the mindless side of the decisions that you have to make every day.
And one last thing I want to add is too, is we, if we're going to come sit here and also criticize the, you know, just the way society is and like why we are idolizing or why, you know, people who are promoting degenerate ideologies are coming to power, or why companies that do, that act immorally to, you know, for profit are in power. We have to realize that the change is going to start with our support of these companies or these people. As we support these corporations and these people, we have to understand that if we want them to not be in power and to not have these massive influences, it's going to start with us and our support for them, or rather our lack of support. And as we sort of stop supporting these people and these industries overall, then we will see them sort of lose their influence. And if that is what we want, then we should stop influencing, or we should stop supporting them as much and giving them a platform to, you know, be as influential as they are. So that is my final comment on that piece.
Yeah, and if we kind of want to transition, I guess, to another topic we had in mind today, it's again follows kind of along that celebrity lines. But recently, Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker gave a quite controversial graduation commencement speech. Something that the second I saw it on the news, I sent it to Mateo and was like, whoa, that's crazy. Now, we're not necessarily endorsing his views on the podcast here, but I think it's something, again, if we want to call back to both the celebrity episode and our cancel culture episode and the reaction to his speech, we can find a lot of insights, especially as it relates to Stoicism. And we talked a lot about how Stoics would view cancel culture in that episode. And the big thing we settled on is, sure, there can be societal consequences where maybe people aren't going to buy his jersey or something. He might, lose endorsements from private companies. But we draw the line at people who say that he should lose his job for his comments. That's, I think, where we settle on this. And it's quite simple, right? Harrison Butker is a devout Catholic who was invited to a Catholic college to give a speech. Are we really then surprised that he gives a speech promoting Catholic traditional values? And should he really be persecuted by losing his job for expressing those values? No. to sum it up, no. That's silly. You can disagree with those values all you want, but he should not lose his job or anything like that just because he simply has an opinion and he wants to state it. If anything, we should give him props for having kind of the guts to be in such a public position as he is and go out and express his faith 100%. In fact, I'd argue we need more of that. So, you can disagree on the premise of the points he makes. And, I certainly disagree with some of the points he makes. Mateo would probably disagree with some of the points he makes. You're not going to agree 100%. But saying, he shouldn't say that or he should lose his job for saying that, things like that is ridiculously stupid. We see people who are our age and are doing commencement speech who are speaking on Palestine and all this Free Palestine stuff. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we move forward in the episode. But the point being here, does that necessarily pertain to graduation? Now, if I was at my graduation, I would prefer to hear some kind of inspiring story speech on the academic journey or the journey in life, something that's inspiring. And I think both Harrison Butker talking about Pride Month and COVID and, womanhood and all those things. Maybe I'd like to hear something else at my graduation. Same thing with that Palestine thing. And here's the deal. I don't think there should be consequences for either of those choices. These are people who are invited to give a speech. They get to choose what they give a speech on. I'm not really sure how the commencement speech process works, to be honest. I haven't had to give one. But I assume that you send a copy of your speech and it gets approved so you don't have some weird stuff going on in your speech that the school doesn't want to hear. And therefore, you went through all the checks. So there shouldn't be these massive life-altering consequences just because you have a really strong opinion and you want to express it. That's what we need to encourage more of. And then when we encourage that and accept that, then we open a dialogue. And that's what's crucial. Because right now, we don't have dialogue. Because if we use this speech as an example, Harrison Butker expresses all these views, and everybody's like, he's racist, he's homophobic, he hates women. Bang, 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 cliche, cliche, cliche. And we don't consider his perspective at all as a Catholic man and sit down at the table for a discussion or, I guess people on the internet can't really do that with an NFL kicker. He's probably not going to respond to you. But we don't open ourselves up for dialogue. We close down dialogue the second somebody makes any opinion because we just throw hate on the fire. And that's kind of the result of the internet for sure. And it's not just about politics or anything. That's kind of where the internet is at now. But what we want to do is encourage open dialogue. And the way we do that is we allow these speeches to continue. We allow people to express their viewpoints openly, and we don't then go try and fire them from their job for expressing their viewpoints. We instead sit down and have a conversation. That's why the First Amendment exists, and that's why this country, I believe, is so great. And so that's just kind of my thoughts. And I think, if we wanted to tie Stoicism into it, there's an inherent element of Stoicism of never apologizing for who you are and the opinions that you have. And I think for somebody to express their strong opinions, whether it's Palestine, whether it's Harrison Butker's opinions, whether it's another political figure expressing their opinions in a commencement speech like Biden did today, I believe, whatever it may be, allow them to do that. Allow them to have their moment, allow them to voice their opinion, and allow them to be unequivocally themselves, because that's how we build a strong and confident society. And that's how I tie Stoicism into that. But that's just kind of my initial thoughts on the situation.
Well, I do not disagree with anything that you said. And I would like to further sort of elaborate on the idea of having the free speech and having the ability to speak your mind. That's the thing, right? Is everyone is all for free speech until somebody says something that really just gets them or really that they really disagree with. And they're like, you can't say that. Well, sorry, but you can. That's the beauty of free speech is we're able to say whatever we want. Now, regarding the speech specifically, not to really delve into it too much, I did not see any form of hate speech or any form of speech that would maybe incite violence further. Now, that would be a whole different story, right? If something was said that could potentially incite violence to a group of people or physically harm another group of people, that's a whole different story. But words in term, you know, what he said was not that to my, as I reviewed it. And I think you would say the same as you also. We both watched the speech. We've read the transcript. We've talked about it. But the thing is also is when the media covers it, it really only covers bits and pieces and then sort of displays this narrative of this is, he said this and he hates this XYZ. But if you really go out and read the whole speech, I mean, I'm going to talk specifically about the part where he hates, it's said that he hates women and that he is very, that he's a misogynist, right? I went through the speech and I looked at it in great detail, specifically the section in which he is discussing essentially the roles of traditional femininity and what it means to be a mother. And what I found was that there was nothing that says women should not be in careers. Women should not work hard to achieve their goals. Simply put, in summary, what he says is women should focus, their primary focus should be on their family over their career. And I think that can be applied to both men and women and to just all people is family should be at the forefront of what we do. It should not, we should never choose our career and our money over our family. And that is also a very Stoic concept. We believe the Stoics believed that, you know, family was very, very important and that choosing material riches and, you know, self-gain over family was wrong. And obviously, as a Catholic man, he's going to have his own views. And like you said, it was expected that he gave this speech as a Catholic man invited. I believe it's a Catholic school. Yes, it's Benedictine College, that he would, you know, sort of portray some of his Catholic views. Now, whether you agree with them or not, that is sort of the environment of the speech. And now whether we can say, you know, this is right or this is wrong, that's up to whoever. But that is what the environment was sort of set as. And so I think I would advise, if you are going to read into the speech and research it, read the transcript and listen to the speech with an open mind to really try and hear what he is saying, because it's very easy to have a point of view and really only pick out the bits and pieces that you want to hear that help strengthen your argument. You told me about the speech and I wasn't really sure what it was about. So I went in and listened to it unbiased. And I picked out the bits and pieces. There were things I do agree with and there were things I disagree with. I can see the pros and cons of his speech, but like you said, I completely disagree when people say he should lose his job. You know, he should be canceled and he should lose everything he has because he decided to speak his mind. That's the beauty of free speech. And we did an episode on cancel culture and why it's pretty toxic to society, because it sort of incentivizes people to not speak their mind in fear of being canceled or having their voice taken away. And that's pretty toxic to just the beauty of being able to share new ideas and new perspectives. We are not advocating that free speech includes hate speech. Technically, free speech encompasses all speech. And by definition, it does. We are not supporting hate speech by any means, but free speech means any speech. And so technically speaking, anything can be said. These are not my opinions. This is just based solely in the Constitution and what is factual. However, regarding Harrison's speech specifically, there was no hate speech that we deemed, and don't take our word for it, read it yourselves. But that was sort of my piece is, as much as we want to disagree or hate the guy, it is in our rights to say whatever we want.
Yeah. And again, it's the difference between like societal consequences and then, you know, consequences in terms of like a real life perspective. And that's the difference, right? The reaction from a lot of people who are angry at the speech is like, the Chiefs should let him go, the NFL should ban him, yada, yada, yada. That's ridiculous for expressing opinion. if you want to disagree, if he wants to get, you know, slammed in the media, because, you know, Kansas City, the city's like Twitter account blasted him, the Chargers made fun of him, that's the appropriate response, right? Like, if you disagree with it and he gets made fun of, okay, that's the natural consequence of what he said. But if the consequence is him losing his job or something like that over a simple opinion, that's ridiculous. And I'm glad you mentioned the actual specifics of it, because the biggest issue people have with this speech is him calling women homemakers and the idea of traditional gender roles, which, again, if he's a devout Catholic who is speaking at a Catholic college, shouldn't really be a surprise that he's expressing these. But let's actually read some of the text from his speech, because these are two important observations I made in terms of, like, why are we so upset about this? The first one that I kind of like, and it's because it mirrors what we do on this podcast in terms of, we've had episodes on traditional masculinity and traditional femininity, and we said it's equally important that both are present in the home. And it's not like Harrison Butker was saying here that, you know, women have to do everything in the home and they have to make the home and they have to, you know, just be the sole provider in terms of taking care of the kids. He called out men too. Right after he talks about the women, he says, "To the gentlemen here today, part of what plagues our society is this lie that has been told to you that men are not necessary in the home or in our communities. As men, we set the tone of the culture, and when that is absent, disorder, dysfunction, and chaos set in. The absence of men in the home is what plays a large role in the violence we see all around our nation." If he calls out both sides, I really don't understand what the problem is here. You can disagree, but he's obviously not targeting women and saying women should only stay in the home. That's the second observation as well. If I scroll up here and find this, he talks about how many of the women are going to have great careers. How many of you are sitting here now about to cross the stage and are thinking about all the promotions and titles you're going to get in your career? Some of you may go on to lead successful careers in the world, but I would venture to guess that the majority of you are most excited about your marriage and the children you'll bring to this world. What he is doing here, again, the media can misconstrue this, is he's saying to, through all of these successes that you're going to have, through the promotions and everything, don't lose vision of family. And if we think about Stoic quotes, one of them, I believe it's Seneca, is talking about like how one of the most important things for a man is family. And that's for anybody. And we have lost that in society, right? My favorite line from this speech is when he talks about the degenerate cultural values that are supported by the media. And that is kind of, I think degenerate cultural values go hand in hand with like an absence of family values, for me personally. And so I think we kind of see this here. The media is in this country is promoting degenerate cultural values. And so when you see here somebody challenging that, I think it's very easy to start a smear campaign against them. And I'm not saying that's what's happening to Harrison Butker here. He definitely said some things that were deservedly controversial and, you know, maybe not inclusive. But those, again, are his opinions, and he's allowed to express those. And you can agree or disagree, but, you know, wishing harm upon him for them is ridiculous. But when somebody kind of goes opposite to what the traditional media is saying, there tends to be this kind of perception of them as a negative person in society. You know, we see that with a lot of political figures, whether you're watching, you know, Fox News, they're going to massacre a bunch of Democrats. You're watching CNN, they're going to get 24/7 coverage of every minute of Trump's trial and try and portray him as a criminal. That's just kind of how media works. It's very sensationalist. They're going to take sound bites that sound good, and they're going to say, "Oh, he said these three words." We're going to cut out the rest of the sentence and say, "He hates this group of people." That's kind of what we see in today's media. And I think that's what we're seeing here. And it's very interesting when you have people with actual brain cells who are not traditional media. I'll use two examples here, Bill Maher and Whoopi Goldberg. These are traditionally kind of left-leaning people. So they would probably disagree fully with all of Harrison Butker's views, but both of them find no problem with his speech. And why is this? Because they have brain cells and can think, we can have a dialogue. We don't have to massacre somebody just for expressing an opinion. That's not how the world works. That's not how it should work. That's not how we build a community together. That's how we, you know, build division, which is exactly what media wants to do. And so my kind of conclusion from this is I laugh at it and I say, a lot of what Harrison Butker talked about came true in the aftermath and was proven in the aftermath of his speech. He talks about, you know, the media promoting degenerate cultural values. Well, when he's sitting there and saying, you know, men need to be in the home and women should prioritize family and we need to, you know, stop promoting degeneracy, the media is like, look at this terrible person. How dare he say this? He hates women, blah, 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 right? So it's just interesting, right? Somebody comes up there and promotes values that are opposite to what the media is portraying, and all of a sudden they're a terrible person. Now, again, you know, I don't know if Harrison Butker's a good person. We don't really know him whatsoever, and we're just judging based off the speech. It's just kind of interesting to note, right, is the media kind of establishments, institutions, whatever you want to call them, have this set reaction almost immediately. But then when you have people who are kind of independent and can think critically and don't have to look at something in such a biased way, they kind of say, you know what, I do disagree with most of this. This is completely opposite to what I have in terms of viewpoint. But I don't see the problem with him expressing that. I don't see why we're mad about this. I think that's the healthy response. And I think that's something that, you know, if you look on social media, you look at these news articles, you might think that there's a lot of backlash and that he is in deep trouble. I don't know if, you know, this is accurate, but I believe I saw an article that said like his jersey sales were number one on the team now or something like that, big boost. So I think what we're noticing is that when you look just on social media and you look just on media, where there are very negative places where the ability to think critically is not rewarded, it's criticized. These places, very negative and saying this is terrible speech, but these people don't think critically. They're very biased. They don't look at the source like Mateo said he did, unbiased. Instead, we need to look at these people who do think critically and do these analysis and, you know, have a degree or something and have some intellect. If we look at the alternative, which is, you know, thinking critically, looking into things, reading it, developing your own opinion and not being told what to think, then you start to see that, you know, maybe if you disagree with it, that's fine. But you come to that healthy space where it's like, we need to have dialogue or else we're just going to stoke further division in this country. Because I don't really think his speech was all that divisive, to be honest. I know that America is becoming a much more secular nation, and Christianity and Catholicism have kind of come under a negative spotlight for a lot of people. But I don't think it's really that divisive to say that we should all prioritize family more, which is exactly what he did in this speech.
I wholeheartedly agree. I was having some conversations with a couple people recently, just about pretty hot topics that we have today. And I think the best thing to do when you have a very intense discussion with someone about hot topics as such is really just remain very calm, rational, and be willing to accept ideas that might be uncomfortable. Not stoic. That's very stoic. I have recently had some pretty intense conversations with people, and as I've practiced stoicism more and more, it's really become prominent to me how simply being calm and rational in a conversation just helps with everything. And it honestly, if you are talking to really anybody, I've talked to people that are so passionate about their ideas, it seems like they will never believe anything else. Responding in such a calm manner that, by the way, is not condescending, because some people can get two things mixed when you're being extremely rational and calm. They can almost see it as condescending. But if you do this in the right way and you respond and you engage in conversation in the right way, people are more willing to kind of sit back and accept an opinion or an idea that might be uncomfortable. I've really seen it play out. And so I think this commencement speech is a great example of how we can practice that. Because while the media was super quick to cover and say all of these things about his speech, it didn't really give a lot of people time to really sit down and think about it and talk to each other about it without having the media sort of shoving these narratives of what it was sort of down our throats. And so I think it's important that not just with this speech, but with topics like Palestine and Israel and like the speech or pride or politics or any major social issue that we are seeing right now and have been seeing, it is important to have passion in your opinions. Super important. But what's more important is for them to be logically formed and made and created with through reason and rationale. And so I encourage you, we are certainly passionate about our ideas. We have a great passion behind Stoicism, and that is what leads us to, you know, create the podcast and our platform. But we are even more willing to sit down and listen to other ideas as well. It's simply, I think, living based off of as much, you know, rationale and simply fact-based opinions as you can is such a great way to live, because it allows you to really know what's fact, but then accept opinions and then try and determine, you know, the most reasonable solution or the most reasonable outcome that you can. So final bit that I would just like to say about the speech is, if you haven't watched it or listened to it or read the transcript, I would encourage you to do so and do it multiple times. Really, you know, even annotate the transcript, really try and dissect things that he is saying and try and really understand, one, the context in which the speech was given, who the speaker is, who his audience is, and then how that affects what he's saying. I thought it was very interesting. And like I said, there were things I did agree with and there were things that I disagree with. But there is no part of me that's going to say he can't stand up there and give that speech and say exactly what he said.
Yeah, and then, you know, the backlash after should only, you know, be contained within your personal sphere, right? With that purchasing power. It's, you know, to bring that back up, right, with purchasing power, if you disagree with Harrison Butker's perspective, then don't support the Chiefs, don't support him. That's fine. That's your choice and more power to you for doing that. But saying that, like, oh, the NFL is an organization or the Chiefs should hold them accountable goes outside of your personal sphere there. And I think that's an inappropriate reaction then.
And I think it was smart of the NFL to say, you know, his views don't reflect us as an organization, which they did come out and say. I think that was sort of just a good disclaimer to be like, oh, this doesn't represent the NFL. These are his personal opinions. Totally fair to say.
Yeah, no doubt. That's like a basic corporate standard, right? When we get sponsors, that's what we're going to say. So it's just like a basic company standard. So that's a very appropriate response from the NFL. But I like that you mentioned passion and all of these things, because the trifecta for me, and I think it closely ties into Stoic values in terms of being an effective debater and just an overall intellectual individual, is passion or ambition, whatever you want to call it, intelligence, and then rationality, which lacks emotional response. Rationality for me means lacks emotional response, and then everything else in terms of the definition of rationality. And when you combine those three, you become a very, very effective and persuasive person. And I think what that means is because when you combine the passion, you obviously care about what you're talking about. You care about what you're expressing, and people want to hear passion. They don't want to hear. We see a lot of disingenuous things in our society and a lot of people who are obviously faking what they're caring about and are just doing it for money or some external motivation. So you want to see passion. We really love to see passion, but it also has to be intelligent, right? You can't be passionate but not know what you're talking about, have absolutely no clue, spouting off facts that are nowhere close to being accurate. Then nobody will care because you're wrong. You don't seem to even care about being right. But then you also need rationality and a lack of emotions so that when you are challenged, you don't get defensive. You know, you might want to defend your point. That's fine. But you don't get personally defensive, because the second that you get personally defensive in a debate or you see the speech and you get offended, then you shut off your ability to truly listen and comprehend. And that's where we get people who are not intelligent anymore, is because they've shut off their ability to listen and comprehend. Epictetus with his, you have two ears and one mouth, you should listen twice as much as you speak. I try to embody that as much as possible, because when you just speak and you speak and you speak and you don't accept criticism of your points, you don't accept any points from the opposite side, and you just speak, you speak, you speak, what are you learning? The only thing you're learning is that, like, you're annoying and you can talk a lot. That's what you're learning. But if you kind of have that rationality to say, I'm not going to be 100% right all of the time. I'm not going to get upset or angry that I'm wrong or that somebody challenged me or they expressed this viewpoint that's different than mine. No, let's hear them out. That's what we've been expressing for probably the last 20 minutes on this podcast, is the let's hear them out mindset comes from rationality. Because when you aren't bothered with being wrong, because it's very easy to be programmed to be like frustrated or scared of being wrong, especially in our academic system. Whole different discussion though. But when you're programmed to have that, then when somebody challenges you, you shut down. And that's the biggest opportunity for learning right there, is when somebody challenges you. Because 8 times out of 10, maybe a little bit lower if you're talking to somebody in our generation because they get their opinions off TikTok or something, you're going to learn something from that person, right? Where you still might disagree at the end of the conversation, right? That's perfectly normal. But like, if you learn something from their perspective, then you just added to your knowledge. And so you didn't lose anything, because nobody cares if you're right or wrong as long as you have a constructive debate. You didn't lose anything in that regard, but you gained more wisdom. You gained more knowledge. So the next time you talk about the topic, you're going to think about, here's this perspective as well. And so you slowly, slowly influence your beliefs to kind of the precipice of being the most informed person that you can be. But we don't see that nowadays. And this Butker speech, I mean, really embodies it, right? We don't see that nowadays. We see the headline. We don't even read the article. We see the headline. We see some clips on social media. We see some comments on social media. Boom, that's our opinion. We formed our opinion. Harrison Butker sucks. You know, F this dude. He's homophobic. Hates women. He's racist. Yada, yada, yada. But the critically thinking people, the people who are intellectual and who have that trifecta, they either agree or disagree. But then they're like, let's go read the speech. And this was my reaction. You know, I saw the headline. I was like, did he really say that? That's crazy if he actually said that.
I go and read the speech. It's much more tame than the media portrayed it to be. I'm like, okay, I agree with a lot of what he said here. You know, some of these points, a little bit too strong for my liking, but I agree with a lot of what he said here. And I don't really get why he's getting, you know, massacred and by the media, and his reputation is getting tarnished.
Yeah, you do. You know why.
You see my point, though. From people who are like me.
Yeah, yeah.
From people who are like me, I'm like, I don't understand why this is the narrative everybody's buying into. And so then you learn, right? And what you learn there is why the narrative is what it is. Look into the media. The point being here is that you need that trifecta. And this is, and I think Harrison Butker actually, you know, really embodies this. Again, intelligence, you know, he's an NFL player, so I'm not sure. I don't really want to comment anything negative about Harrison Butker, but an NFL player, I don't know if it's above average intelligence, but he certainly is passionate. And you know, there's a bit of rationality there. And so that's what we need more of. And so I encourage people to, I think, really look into this situation and then to actively speak your mind as well without fear of consequence. Because again, you know, as long as you're not promoting violence or hate, which we don't stand for here on this podcast, speak your mind and you'll become more intelligent. And so you can fulfill that kind of trifecta of values even more efficiently and become a much better debater for it. And if we can transition here, talking of debates, last thing that we wanted to touch on today is something. Go.
Just one quick thing before you, just about speaking your mind. We encourage, everyone has the ability and the freedom to speak their mind, but we would encourage a well thought out rational argument before you do so. And one thing I would like to say, if you are someone who tells, if someone is saying something that you find, you know, really just wrong, whatever, and you say, you can't say that, or you shouldn't think that, or you can't this, you shouldn't this, maybe check yourself a little bit. You may not agree with it, but that doesn't mean that somebody else can't have a differing opinion or shouldn't say something else. I've had this said to me multiple times, and I'm saying, well, of course I can say it. And if you hear me out as to why I'm saying it, then we can talk about it further. But don't just shut someone down and say, you can't say that or you shouldn't say that simply because you disagree. That's all I want to add.
Yeah, well, and it's a very popular narrative of like us versus them. We see it with the two-party political system in this country where, you know, conservatives think liberals are the biggest idiots ever and they don't want to talk to them. Liberals think conservatives are just bigots who don't, you know, deserve an argument. And that's how we see it play out in just casual conversations, is you can't say that, or just judging that immediately because of one political view you have that you're lesser than me or something like that. Very, very poor way to live. Very poor way to approach any conversation. Something that I think is promoted really by the two-party system. So demolish the two-party system. Again, I guess, speaking of the two-party system as well, one thing that's personally affected us that we wanted to talk about today is the Palestine-Israel conflict, the protests we're seeing on college campuses. Mines did not have any protests on it, interestingly enough. They tried to plan one and then nobody showed up. I know your experience was different and I'll let you talk about that a little bit. But talking about this conflict, you know, Russia-Ukraine, we did an episode on war. You should go check that out. Didn't get as much viewers as we'd like. Thought we did a really good job with that one. Very good Stoic perspective on war. It's basically war is bad. Avoid war at all costs, which we are not doing right now. But we just like to speak a little bit on the Palestinian protests because there's a lot of perspectives on it. Some great, some not so great. And it's just a very nuanced situation. It reminds me of when we were taught in history class about the Vietnam War and how college students, a lot of college age students during that time are protesting the Vietnam War. It seems very similar to that in that sense of demographic. Definitely not tactic, but just a lot of interesting historical parallels that I noted, and it's something that has closely affected both of us, and we'd really enjoy talking about. I'm sure our audience would love hearing us talk about it as well.
Yeah, well, like you said, so if you are new or if you didn't know, I am going to a university in Los Angeles, which if you are familiar with the protests happening on the western side of the country right now, a lot of major protests are happening at like UCLA or Berkeley or USC. Pretty extreme lengths of the protests as far as they've gone on college campuses. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying we've seen, you know, people camping out. We've seen just a lot of action taken to voice the opinions of the people who are arguing for a freeing Palestine. Thankfully, at my school, I would say things haven't gotten too out of hand. We haven't seen a lot of violence. There hasn't been anything of sort. We've certainly had protests, but it's mostly just marching through the streets or the sidewalks of campus. And again, as someone who comes into this issue as unbiased as possible regarding just the freedom of speech, I have no problem with people's right to protest. I think that's a right that we have, and that's a right that we should be using if we believe in something very strongly. I do certainly have an issue when it gets violent, and it really sucks, because a lot of the times when things get violent, it actually has nothing to do with the initial or the original argument. It's simply just sort of a byproduct. You know, a lot of the times we see violence, it's not even people who are part of the organization. It's people who hop in and make it violent so that the organization protesting gets hated on, or vice versa. You know, people just are very angry in the organization and they just do something completely not even related to the cause and just, you know, wreak havoc. So it's certainly a complex issue that's not all black and white. Regarding the violence, you know, we've seen violence on both sides. We don't stand for either. And I'm talking about in the protests, not about the actual war at the moment. You know, we've seen Jewish students being violent towards Palestinian supporting students, and vice versa. And neither of it's okay. In our war episode, we talked about how you don't fight fire with fire. The answer to fighting violence is not more violence. Marcus Aurelius, the best revenge is to be unlike the enemy, right? Waste no time arguing what a good man should be one. It's really this concept of, you know, the best way to stop the fire is to stop feeding it. And so with the violence that's happening within the school communities, I feel very sorry for the students who are simply there, you know, exercising their right to protest or to speak, or simply, you know, not protesting and they just want an education, and then they are getting an unsafe school environment. That I feel very sorry for the students. I think this issue has become very heated, and rightfully so. I think what's happening in that area of the world right now is awful, 100%. And I think we can both say, you know, the atrocities that are being committed on both sides have been horrible. And we'll go into that in a minute. But what's really unfortunate now is with the protests, and sort of what we're seeing is it's us versus them, zero sum, one is right, the other is completely wrong. There's no sort of wanting to really talk about this in a civil manner. It really just gets really heated. And when someone speaks their mind up on an opposing opinion, we just see it backlash, 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 backlash. It gets violent. It just gets really heated. People get shut down. And it's unfortunate, because as serious of an issue as this is, and as much attention that we acknowledge this, that the issue should be getting, it's sort of going in the wrong direction. Now, I understand the people being upset, because, for example, at my school, I will not name the school or the person for my own sake, but the administrators are closing doors and refusing to talk about this issue. Particularly, our students are upset with certain stocks that we fund, or companies that we fund that are supporting genocide, essentially. And the people who are in charge of these decisions are closing their doors and refusing to have a conversation. Now, I think that's very wrong. I think, you know, completely shutting down the idea of a conversation to, you know, share ideas and have a civil discussion is wrong. I also think the, you know, sort of the disturbing and violent backlash towards that is also wrong. But I understand the people being upset that they aren't even getting a say in the first place. So that's sort of my experience. I've seen protests happen, but I'm also aware that it's not as severe on my campus, and things haven't gotten as violent and as disruptive. That's sort of my experience. I know you said one was going to happen, a protest, but no one showed up. So I'll let you speak on your experience, your opinion. But for me, trying to be as unbiased as possible, I see the upset, both sides being as upset. And I think it's getting very heated to the point where a civil conversation is sort of going out the window. And I think that's very unfortunate.
Yeah. So I guess I don't really have any personal experience. We had a few mini protests and stuff like that, which is interesting, because mine's, being an engineering school, is very close relationships with companies like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, which are providing a lot of the weapons to Israel. So very interesting that our campus has not been very active with that. But, you know, there's so many things that I can bring up about this, you know, topic. It's hard to try to choose one to start with. The first one I'll choose is just, it is one of the rare events where, like, I'm proud of our generation, is that our generation, you know, they might not be doing it effectively,
they may not be doing it in a way that, you know, brings a lot of support to their cause. We are voicing our opinion and we're very active in doing that. And we're getting very politically active. And I think that's something that we need more of. So that's kind of my first thought on that is, you know, I think a lot of them don't really have a lot of information and know a lot about Palestine. If you see a lot of the interviews with people who are actually in those encampments and things, I don't know if they know the full details of the situation and what they're standing up for, but I'm proud that our generation is a generation that wants to stand up for something. Like that's great. And I think that's something that we need more of. However, with that kind of being said, I think, again, if you look at those interviews and you look at some protesters who are calling for like Enfitada, which is just a series of suicide bombings and like senseless violence, they don't, hopefully they don't know what that means. Hopefully they're not calling for that, or they don't know the history of Palestine, things like that. It's kind of funny that a lot of these protests that are noteworthy where this is happening is like Columbia University or Ivy League schools where we supposedly have our best and brightest. And I think for me, not that, you know, to take a shot at higher education, even though I think higher education is a scam now, but you see these students who maybe aren't the most intelligent in terms of being knowledgeable about the situation and do dumb things that don't generate support, or they harass Jewish students for no reason when the Jewish students have nothing to do with the current situation. And you think, maybe Columbia University isn't where the best and brightest are. Maybe these Ivy League schools have fallen off a little bit. So another observation there that's not really related to the situation, but I think something that's kind of indirectly reflecting right now is that if you are like me and you got rejected from those schools, or you're not going to an Ivy League school and you feel bad about it and you feel like you missed an opportunity or something like that, or you're less intelligent than people who go there, take a look at how these protesters are acting and what they think. Maybe you weren't supposed to be there. Maybe it's better for you that you aren't there. Maybe Ivy League schools are just a reputation thing now instead of an actual academic excellence thing.
That's insane for you to say such a thing.
Who knows? But going back to the actual situation itself, I think the Stoics here, I think in terms of if I were to put like a Stoic perspective on protesting, there's a certain degree of like acceptance that comes with Stoicism. But that does not apply when it's injustice, when it's something that's very, very wrong, because you have politically active historical Stoics like Cato, Marcus Aurelius, who took action when they saw injustices and didn't sit by and do nothing. And so it leads me to believe that if the cause you are fighting for, you believe it to be virtuous and you believe it to be just, upholding those cardinal virtues, and it really will affect change, then I think pursuing it to the nth degree is something that is very inherently Stoic to do. So I think you'll see a lot of people who maybe question or like, should I really get involved with protests if I'm trying to be Stoic or trying to embody these values? Because you see videos of protests, they're very emotional places. You know, emotions run very high. It's not a great, honestly, not a great place to be. So you're like, all right, how can I reconcile, you know, these Stoic values and like this non-emotional kind of things with going to these protests? And it's two things, right? It's that virtue. Is it a virtuous cause? And is it peaceful? And I think what we've seen with these Palestinian protests, I believe the statistic is like 97% of them are peaceful. So we're good there. The issue that I take with it, though, is these encampments on like college campuses, fine. Like, that's a great way to protest. And giving your speech on it, you know, bringing a Palestinian flag when you're walking across the stage, again, you're right to do so. But when you see, if we use an example from Colorado, the Aurora campus, I believe it's Metro State, they literally had to shut down campus because they were doing sit-ins in the buildings, and so students have to take all their finals online now. That to me is ridiculous. Again, they have the right to do that, but nobody's going to support a cause that does that because you're just harming other students who, again, have no role in the situation whatsoever just because of this cause. Who's going to support that? I don't find that that's going to generate a lot of support. So that's where my kind of line is for protest. I'm all for protest when it's, you know, ending injustice and supporting a really good cause. Great, go protest. I'm really glad that people are executing their voice. Very proud of that. But when you do that in a way that disturbs other people's ability to just simply go to school, that's where you lose me. Because interfering with those people when they have no power over the situation whatsoever, they're not the direct stakeholders, then what are you doing? You're just getting people to hate you. And that's not an effective way to do that. So it's not something where I'm like, you know,
hating on these protesters because they're doing it. I'm just like, why? This makes no sense. You're not going to the people whose, you know, opinions actually matter. You're disturbing people's ability to do school, which is what they are paying to do, and you expect people to be sympathetic to you. It doesn't really make sense to me. So, you know, that's my advice. Stay in the encampments, do that thing, do the graduation stuff, do stuff that doesn't disturb other people's ability to learn, and go to college. Well, learn's a stretch because I don't know how much learning you do in college, but don't disturb people's ability to get a piece of paper that they're paying $100,000 for, give or take. In-state, yeah. If you go to a school in Los Angeles, it might be a little bit more, but if you're like me and you go in-state, it's like $100,000. Still an insane amount of money. $100,000, $200,000, $250, whatever. All that's an insane amount of money.
But I would like to add to your point real quick before you go on is I've said that to people. Like, I don't think people, the education of students should be disturbed. And I get the common response I hear is, oh, I'm sorry, like the genocide of, you know, children in Palestine isn't enough to like disturb your, is too much to disturb your education. And I'm like, I understand your frustration, but that is not a logical rebuttal to the fact that you are causing more harm to people who are not doing anything to support your cause. Now, I understand why we would be upset about that. Yes, but does that mean that we should then go and harm more people and, you know, sort of interrupt their education that they are paying for simply to make them aware of a cause? We're already aware. We are already aware. It's not that we're not aware or that we're not supporting you, but we can support things while also remaining focused on our own things, is what I would say to that. We're aware because we heard you outside walking around. No problem. You're too right to do that. But then to walk in and then disrupt the education of other individuals to, you know, further emphasize why you're protesting, that's where it sort of just becomes you're sort of stepping out of line. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, and that response too, what is the student who, just to throw in a random example, I'm not really sure if this happens or not, what is the student who's in the library studying for their calculus final, what really influence are they going to have on the situation in Gaza or the situation on your campus, right? Again, it goes back to you're targeting the wrong people. Your protest should be directed at the people who can actually change things, because if you're directing at people who can't do anything to change, then it's a waste of time for you. Right. So that's kind of where I go with it. It's like the same thing where, you know, I'm sure the person on the highway is well aware of climate change, but you sitting in their way and interrupting their ability to go to work and like make money to feed their family is going to make them hate you, not respect your cause. So it's that kind of support barrier there. And then, you know, if we scaled it out in terms of like the whole overall situation, I think there needs to, it's just interesting the divestment argument. When, you know, it's our government's fault, not really colleges. I find that very interesting, but I guess it's kind of sphere of influence and where you can target. But it's a very brutal situation. And if you look at like the reasons behind like this massive wave of protests, which I actually didn't, you know, I didn't know for a little bit, I guess I can admit, where they discovered mass graves in previously Israel occupied areas of Gaza, where people had their hands tied behind their back and were executed, which would be a massive violation of human rights. So if you look at this kind of cause here, and then the effect it had with the protests, then it seems like a very valid issue. And I think that's kind of where we settle on it between the two of us, is it's a very valid issue to protest. There's certainly a lot of reason to be angry when innocent children are killed unnecessarily. Well, anytime innocent children are killed, children are killed in conflict, it's unnecessary. And so when that happens and it's so blatant and it seems that nobody really cares about it because Israel continues to kill children, then it makes sense. Like, it's frustrating. It's very easy to get emotional over it. And I think we talked about this a little bit in the war episode with protests about Gaza, where the emotions about it are getting the best of everybody so that we can't sit down and have civil conversations. That's what you mentioned about the civility of it all, is it's really tough. Like, understandably, with this kind of situation, it's very tough when lives are lost, when children are killed, when innocent women are killed, when innocent people lose their lives. A, that's the cause of any war, so maybe war is not the best strat. Maybe we should actively avoid war at all costs. But B, the debates around it are obviously going to be very heated, right? So that's understandable. But we're seeing a boiling point here. And so it's kind of, for me, like that make or break point where it's like, our generation is showing that we know how to protest. We know how to affect change. We're showing that we care, which is great. but are we going to show that we can do it in an effective manner that people will support? Are we going to do it in a self-destructive manner that just causes a bunch of division and nothing changes? Now, our government doesn't really listen to us, surprise, surprise, so I'm not really sure that the protests are going to change even if anything at the governmental level, even if they were efficient. But just being able, that's so my barometer then is just being able to have that dialogue. And we see it, I think it's actually equally guilty of protesters and counter-protesters, where we see these videos where, you know, they're getting face chest to chest, they're in each other's face, they're yelling at each other. It does nothing. So taking a more stoic approach to it, being, again, passionate, intelligent, and rational on the situation is going to yield the best results. And so that's my thing is, if you're listening to this, A, I really do hope you care about this situation because it's very important. But B, I hope that the passion that you have for it leads to you really, really investigating on your own the details so you can be very well informed. And then you can just know the events instead of just being angry about something you know nothing about, which then just leads to you looking dumb or having a non-productive conversation. So that's my two-part advice there.
And I'll just agree by sort of, I guess, or finish off by sort of reiterating your point is it's completely understandable the frustration that's coming behind, especially when it seems like, you know, schools or the government's not taking much action. So it's very understandable why there would be frustration. And obviously we can both admit, you know, completely unbiased, it's pretty unreasonable now to still be in Gaza and be committing all these atrocities, and the murder of innocent children and people it's horrible. There's no justification, you know, for that. But what I would say is, if possible, and if you are still listening with us today, trying to be as civil as possible will ultimately result in the likelihood of you actually getting a conversation with someone who does have influence and who does have power to actually say something and potentially spark change. I am not saying we should stop protesting, but I'm saying if you want to really get to talk to somebody, I would say the best way to go about it would not be protesting at their door. It would be, you know, really writing them a well-written out letter, or sending them a very well-written email, or something that is trying to be as calm as possible and as non-threatening as possible. I'm not saying that the protests are threatening, but I think personally for me, if someone offered, you know, a pretty calm discussion that would be very intense but also very rational over, you know, someone at my door protesting, I think I would choose the first instead of the latter. But I'm not saying we should stop protesting again, and I am not against the protests. But like you were saying, it's important that we have and maintain the ability to sit down and really speak about these things calmly. Because as passionate as we deserve to be about issues as such, it is equally as important that we're able to sit down and put the emotions aside and speak rationally and look for maybe a compromise, or instead of just us being completely right and the other side being completely wrong, really just trying to get somewhere, even if it's one small step rather than not getting anywhere at all. So that's my...
Well, and another thing I'd like to express is, can we stop with the stupid crap, which when I'm saying that, I'm referencing, I saw a couple videos the other day, I think it was on the USC campus, where you have these counter protesters who are playing like Baby Shark and stuff so that the protesters can't sleep in their encampment. It's so ridiculously stupid to me. And I, you know, it's something that I just hate, is it's kind of that, again, thing of like shaming people for just having viewpoints. Sit down and have the conversation. Now, I think people on both sides, I think, don't want to have the conversation equally. So I'm not trying to target one side with any of the messaging I have here today. But all of this stupid, I really call it internet-based stuff, where it's more like trolling and non-substantive action, it's really tiresome. And I think it paints us very negatively as a generation, because the people I see do it are usually people who are our age or in college. No surprise, these protests are on college campuses. But it just portrays us in a negative light. And then it allows the media, which it has already done, to run with like this story of like, we don't know what we're talking about, and these protests are violent, which the media has, some media has tried to spin that narrative, even though like 97% of the protests have been peaceful. So it creates kind of a catastrophic effect. So always consistently, whether you're protesting, counter-protesting, whenever you're upholding your view, do it in the most respectable way possible, if I had to boil it down. Represent your viewpoint with the most utmost respect and character integrity that you can, because then people are going to associate, well, this person has this viewpoint and they were willing to listen. They had high character, good morals. Maybe we should consider this viewpoint. If somebody comes in and starts, you know, banging a trash can, not letting you sleep, is being a real ass about it, and, you know, doesn't have any respect and any character, you're like, all right, I'm not even going to consider this person's opinion. So not only just like to be a decent person, but to get your point across, do it in the most respectable, utmost way possible so that you can represent and associate those values with your views. That's how you become a very good person, very effective at articulating your viewpoint and affecting change, which is what our generation wants to do. So yeah, they can learn a lesson from the situation and see the results in real time, which I'm very interested to see.
And one of the best ways to go about doing such is, instead of focusing on weakening the argument of the opposing side, focus more on strengthening your own, right? So the best way to really, I would say, get support is not attack the other side. It's to strengthen your own argument. We see that a lot. It's people spend more time saying, these people are wrong because this is this. That's why you should support us. A better way to go about it is to say, we believe this, 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 this. This is why you should support us, or this is why you should listen to us. It's a lot more civil. It's a lot more peaceful, because then there is no, I guess, even the idea of an attack of the other side's opinions, and it just will come across as someone, or if it comes across like that, someone will more likely be willing to engage in a conversation about it. But like we said, it really just comes down to having a rational and calm discussion about an issue, and just don't stop defending what you believe in, but also be willing to hear out the other side as well. I'm not talking about just the Israel-Gaza war, but with any issue, be willing to sit down and set your biases aside and, you know, speak your opinions, but also be willing to listen to others. Listen twice as much as you speak, like Epictetus said. I think that's the big quote that we can take away from today, is listen or observe or read twice as much as you choose to put something out there.
Yeah. And it really reminds me of, this is a Jordan Peterson clip that I saw where he's talking about, like, if you're constantly the loudest person in the room, like, you may think you are the most passionate, but what you should do is, if you're the loudest person in the room and somebody that like doesn't respond to you and you're just kind of carrying on, is you should stop and observe, because you're missing something. And like that's something that's really stood out to me the past few days, is when we think about that and we apply that to like political conversations, it makes a lot of sense. When you're the loudest in the room, nobody really respects your viewpoint. They're like, when is this person going to stop talking? You know, even if you're making great points, if you're loudest in the room and you constantly cut other people off and you don't let people get a word in, and you're just, you know, kind of overwhelming the conversation, people are going to stop responding to you, and you're missing something. And what you're missing is that input, because it informs you. So you have to be willing to be informed. And what that means, it seems simple, right? Like, oh, okay, I need to go research my points. No, you need to do that. Yes, that should form the basis of your opinions. But being willing to be informed means that when you're wrong about something, you're being informed by somebody else that you're wrong, and you take that feedback. And you don't get defensive, you don't get angry, you don't dispute it. You look into it, and they're like, "All right, man, I was wrong on that. Like, that's crazy." But you're human, so it's okay to be wrong, believe it or not. And so, if you're wrong on something, it's better that you eventually get on the right side than you just stay in the dark, stay ignorant, and are on the wrong side when the time comes. So be informed. I don't think there's a wrong or a right side. I didn't mean to make that comment in terms of anything in relation to Israel and Gaza. I think both sides should sit down and have a ceasefire so we can stop the unnecessary death and military spending, because it only benefits military contractors and the military industrial complex. It just hurts all citizens on both sides. So that's what the solution should be. But for the people on both sides who think that they're on the right side, just a constant willingness to be informed will get you a long ways in this conflict. It'll make you stand out. So just keep that perspective in mind as you're standing up for what you believe in.
Yep. And I personally don't have anything else to add about this issue in particular. I'll just agree. You know, like you said, there really should just be a ceasefire and the war should just really stop, because that would be awesome. And then people would stop dying. And as we talked about in our episode, Stoic Perspective on War, it should be avoided at all costs. And really, the main reason that war is, you know, created in the first place is from a place of greed. The want to conquer a people or a religion or a territory, or just the want to be in control. And those are not good reasons for people to die or to go to war. There really is no good reason to go to war. And I think the one thing we discussed was the only way that a Stoic would justify going into battle is if you are in danger and defending yourself and your, you know, your territory and your people, is if it's a very completely last resort option. But that is really the only reason that a Stoic would justify war. So I think if the Stoics were here today, they would say the most logical solution is simply a ceasefire. I mean, it really doesn't get much more complicated than that. But I agree with you. Like you said, stay informed and be willing to be introduced to new perspectives, not just with this issue, but with others. Be willing to take in something that is uncomfortable. Advice or just new information that maybe doesn't necessarily exactly align with what you believe in could really teach you a couple things. That's just the truth of the matter. So I don't have anything more to say about this. I think those are the three big birds that we were going to be knocking down today. One thing that we would like to say is our most recent guest, Ryan T. Quirk. We would, if you've listened this far, we would very much like to sort of speak on what he has been doing recently. Ren, I know you have more of the details, but Ryan recently spoke, and we will put the link to that video in the description, whether you're listening on Spotify, YouTube, or whatnot. You can click on the link below to watch his speech. Ren, continue on where I'm leaving off. Oh.
Okay. All right. Ryan, very impressive, gave what I feel like was like a professional TED talk at the Institute of World Culture back in April. We haven't uploaded an episode in a while, so this is when we finally were able to promote it. But it's called From Fear into Love, A Young Man's Odyssey. It's about Ryan's life journey. Very informative. We've both listened to it. It's a great listen. Really profound, teaches you a lot. Like Mateo said, we'll put it in the description. It was an hour and a half. Worth the listen. So go show some love, some support for Ryan. And we are excited to see what he does in the future. So with that being said, this has been this week's episode of the Gen Z Stoic Podcast. If you've stuck around for the hour and a half and our ramblings about current events, thank you for listening. And be sure to tune in again next week.